From APM in New York, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. Today, Netflix will release its earnings report after the bell. The video streaming company has been on a tear. A Morgan Stanley survey last week suggested that for the first time in 6 years, the company leads all other premium TV and internet video subscription services when it comes to making good stuff. Take that, HBO, Hulu, and the rest. Just one problem. Good content is dough spent. Dough coming in is related to user growth. And on that score, Netflix has some challenges. Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
In early January, Netflix stormed into more than 130 countries, giving it a presence nearly everywhere, except for China, North Korea, and a couple other places. Investors are going to be looking closely at today's earnings report to see how well the land grab is paying off. Paul Verna is an analyst at eMarketer.
The subscriber numbers are going to be pivotal just simply because of the massive expansion that they had.
Counting on global subscriptions for growth is risky.
There's table stakes to just be in a country.
Michael Pachter is a research analyst at Wedbush Securities. He says Netflix had to create the infrastructure to deliver the service.
They have to then license content independently region by region or country by country.
And he says Netflix has to tailor its offerings to different markets with different tastes. Not everyone in the world wants to watch Fuller House. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
From the small screens to the big screens, the Tribeca Film Festival is happening here in New York this week, something you'll find more of this year, virtual reality. The festival has a space dedicated to new forms of storytelling, and most installations this year use some form of virtual reality. In a modified tent built by our partners, the BBC, with a floor covered in hay, I put on a brand new Oculus headset and a haptic vibrating vest.
It's a bit like putting a rucksack on. It's quite heavy.
I was transported to the Turning Forest, where I met a giant creature with giant teeth that played musical tones when you looked into its mouth.
It's like a dragon, dog dragon. Whoa.
Weird stuff, sure, but pretty cool. Tribeca wants to be seen as on the cutting edge. Is the larger film industry going to buy in? I caught up with Ingrid Kopp, who curated the Storyscapes space.
You know, increasingly, I think you do, to be relevant as a film festival, you have to include things like VR and installations and projects that speak to the web and are of the web, because that's the world we live in now.
Do you look at any of these pieces and feel like very soon they're going to make it into theaters?
The conversation is always like, well, VR is very solitary, and how do you have a VR experience in a movie theater? But, you know, there's a huge spectrum of possibilities with VR, and some of it is solitary, but so is reading a book, right?
Do you think creators are early adopters or no?
That's a really interesting question. I think filmmakers can definitely be no.
Yeah.
One of the things about film and filmmakers is we tend to be a little bit of a traveling circus of each other. So like it's awesome and it's collaborative and it's wonderful, but it does tend to be quite inward looking.
Is that part of your mission? Like, is that kind of what you're trying to accomplish? Is bring the techies and the film people together?
Totally. I mean, that's what I live for now. Like, for me, the space is all about that. Like, I love seeing like people from like the sort of the maker community and the hacker community and people making robots like all in here, because I think that's exactly what it is. It's about taking things apart and putting them back together again. I hope that's what people get from this, that stories can come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, but you kind of have to look outside of your silo to see that.
Ingrid Kopp is programmer of Storyscapes. Ingrid, thank you for talking with us.
Thanks very much.
The other day, my wife sent me a text suggesting we go to a rock show in Brooklyn. My response? The Android emoji with a straight-across mouth full of teeth. I meant it as a silly face of anticipation, but her response was, why the angry face? Turns out this kind of miscommunication happens a lot, and it's compounded by the fact that depending on the platform you are messaging from or receiving to, Apple device, Android device, even Snapchat versus Facebook, emojis actually look different. PhD student Hannah Miller and her colleagues conducted a study about this at the University of Minnesota, and she's here to talk about the findings. Hannah, doesn't the Unicode Consortium organization maintain the standards for emoji already?
So you're exactly right. There technically is a standard through the Unicode Consortium, but all they provide is a code so that it can work across the platforms and a name for it. And so each of the companies is at liberty of doing their own interpretation as long as it matches that name.
What did you find to be the most misinterpreted?
So there's different ways to think about that, but the one that we used that had really varying interpretations was the smiling face with open mouth and tightly closed eyes.
When you describe it, I assume that that's like just laughing really hard out loud.
Yeah, but if you look at some of the pictures, the way the eyes are and the way the mouth is, sometimes it might come across like screaming or throwing a tantrum, kind of.
After doing this study, do you see a clear way forward in terms of solving this?
Something our lab is interested in, you could foresee building tools, something like the ability to see what the emoji was supposed to look like on the device that it was sent from. So you could see it's in the intended rendering.
Whoa. You could like touch it and it would show the version that was on the sending platform.
On the sending side, exactly. It'd be cool if we could do that.
What's your favorite emoji?
Oh, my favorite emoji. I think I like the winky face with tongue sticking out. It's just kind of fun.
Hannah Miller is with the University of Minnesota. She's co-author of a new study looking at how emojis affect how we communicate. Hannah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ben.
You can find a link to Hannah's study at facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.